Were you surprised by the lack of security on Mark's computer, considering that he's an internet activist and a known hacker?
Well, I think we have to define hacker again. There are different kinds.
Sure.
But it's a lab computer, and it's clearly a lab computer, and there are multiple people who are allowed to use it. So I would expect it to have a lower security than, say, a secured communication system of some kind. He's obviously not trying to do that, but if it's a shared computer, of course, that is what you would expect. But I wasn't surprised by this because it's the same facts that were misrepresented in Sweden that are being, I think, misrepresented here in Denmark. And I don't think it's intentional. I just think that the prosecutor is ignorant of the topic, and he has said that himself, and that is an important detail. Everyone has justice in mind, but he clearly does not have technical details in mind.
Yeah. Elaborate a little bit more about the Twitter part of this hearing. I mean, what's your point?
Their point was to show that we're having a conversation, and I suppose you could say that there is a conversation that is using Twitter, but that's actually Twitter's sort of advertisement, like join the conversation, and I think that's it's clear that he not only does not understand detailed technical things. It's pretty obvious he does not understand anything related to technology at all. And the evidence put in front of him, there is no chain of custody. There is no proof that that thing that is there is what was said online. And the relationships between different tweets are totally made up. For example, he invented this notion, the Free Anacata Movement. Have you ever worked for the Free Anacata Movement? And maybe that's just a translation problem. But this is a very strange thing to me because what he really was asking is, have you ever expressed the political sentiment that someone you consider to be a political prisoner should be free? And I would have said, oh, of course. But he didn't ask that. He asked if I worked for a movement. No, I've never been paid. In fact, I mean, I think maybe the defense in Sweden refunded my plane ticket. I don't know. I think actually I paid the movement, if there was one, not the other way around.
You can express the view of him being a political prisoner in the case. Can you elaborate a bit on that and elaborate on to which motive would that be?
Well, there are several things, but one of the things that is quite clear is that if we look to definitions of political prisoners and prisoners of conscience, we see that anyone who is jailed and put in incommunicado, those people, when they're no longer allowed to speak their beliefs, when they're no longer allowed to communicate, that is one of the fundamental and core components of being a political prisoner. So, for example, when Cambodia arrested him and detained him, and they did not allow him to speak to anyone, the embassy could not reach him, his family couldn't reach him, and no one knew where he was, and then suddenly he was in Sweden. And again, he was held incommunicado for long periods of time, held in solitary confinement, denied access to all sorts of systems, and treated as if he were a violent criminal. Those things are textbook examples of governmental overreach. The reason this occurred is because in the Pirate Bay case, he, as a political person, believed that people have the right to speak freely and to share information. He was punished for that, and they wished to punish him even further for that. And the Swedish government, in particular, the investigating officer, if I understand the situation correctly, he now works for the music business and the movie business that previously he was investigating. It's a revolving door. So if we look at that, corruption is another element, governmental corruption, investigating police, doing those types of things, is another element of the political prisoner that we have to consider. And those things are both true. Furthermore, I had the opportunity to ask Carl Bildt in person, as a journalist, why is it that Anacata, Gottfried Svartholm Warg, was taken from Cambodia? Was it legal? And Carl Bildt in the Stockholm City Hall said to me, it was legal. And I said, great, I believe you. Can you tell me which law? Was it legal under Cambodian law? Was it legal under international law? Or was it legal under Swedish law? Do you, as the foreign minister of Sweden, assert that it is the case that you can take a Swedish citizen from anywhere on the planet? And he said, it was legal. And I said, great, okay, I agree, it was legal. But is it legal because you said it's legal or because there's a law about it? And he said, it's legal. And I said, I see, because you said it is legal. And that, to me, when the foreign minister of Sweden says those types of things, combined with the other qualifications, it is clear that he is a political prisoner. And it is clear that since he has never advocated the use of violence, he probably qualifies as a prisoner of conscience. But because he's white and this is Scandinavia, people laugh at that.
So it's some sort of like from the Swedish state, you believe it's some sort of punishment for his part in the Pirate Bay.
I mean, that's definitely part of it. I don't think it's just punishment for that, though. I think it's punishment for embarrassing them, for being incompetent fools, which they are, and for lying in court and getting caught, which they did, and I caught them.
Mm. What do you... The whole Logica case, the whole CSC case, because there's like a whole debate being stirred up about the lack of IT security in big multinational American-owned companies. What do you think about these hacks? Do they play a role?
Well, I think it's very clear from an article that was released late last night, early this morning, that the evidence being collected by the victim is tainted evidence. That doesn't meet the standard of justice that anyone would have expected anywhere. Imagine that I said there was a murder, and I said, and by the way, here's some bloody thing. That's the evidence. Well, that's a tainted, inadmissible piece of evidence, probably. Obviously, that's for the judge and for the jury to decide, but it seems to me quite clear that has occurred with CSC. So there is something to be said about how you could put a computer on the internet that is vulnerable in this way and that someone could break into it. That amounts to, in my mind, negligence. And then to do these forensics processes without giving the evidence to the state means that they can selectively manipulate what evidence is available, which we see systematic across the whole case. For example, Gottfried's defense lawyer does not have access to a copy of the hard drive. That means exculpatory evidence, which is a necessity for due process and for justice, is missing. And in the Sapo case in Sweden, where they made this file, they specifically said, we have ruled out the computer could be remote controlled. But later in court, they withdrew that because they admitted in court that they had not actually even examined the whole computer. And again, this is, I believe, clear malice or ignorance or a little bit of both, depending on how you see these things. And I think that the Swedish state is angry about him and about his friends. I see that about WikiLeaks. I see that about trying to taint this with Julian Assange. You see this with Peter Sunde. This is a new generation of dissidents who live in exile, like Sarah Harrison, like Edward Snowden, and in fact, like myself. I live in exile in Germany, and I have for, it's self-imposed exile, but for more than a year and a half now. Because for years I was harassed by my government for working with WikiLeaks to expose war crimes, crimes against humanity, and massive corruption issues. And the prosecutor tries to discredit us by saying that revealing crimes is somehow a crime and that we are somehow scum when it is he who does not even understand what is being revealed.
You called some of the technical difficulties unintentional, or the misunderstandings unintentional. Could you elaborate on that?
Well, I don't think the prosecutor understands anything. Therefore, I don't believe that he, when he makes a mistake, would be intentionally misleading the court. He has a report, and the report, of course, shows, without question, that something is asserted. He can't correct it because he doesn't understand it. So, for example, the Python script that they kept going back to, he doesn't understand that it was an example in a specific context. And so he's trying to lead the court without actually knowing what he's talking about. So that's on accident. That's not intentional. His interest is justice, right? I mean, no disrespect to the prosecutor. But the person that prepared the report, maybe they just didn't understand the context. Maybe they didn't understand the Swedish trial. Maybe that was on purpose, maybe not. I don't know. But it's clear that the prosecutor has the interest of justice. They just are not going to achieve that result with their current process and behavior.
Speaking of the prosecutor, he tried in advance of the actual case to, to prevent you from actually showing up today and giving your testimony. What do you think about that attempt?
I think it underscores the political nature of the case and of the trial and of all the people involved. And that happens to me quite a lot because people who protect criminals of the state variety tend to not particularly like it when an investigative journalist reveals it. For example, why is this prosecutor, with no evidence at all, going after these two gentlemen in court instead of dealing with, for example, the Rampart A scandal, where it is very clear that the NSA is wiretapping the fiber connections, wiretapping everybody in this entire country, in fact, probably with the PET. Why is it that they're not investigating that? That's a crime a millisecond, and you know who's committing it, and it's in public. And the answer is because it is political, because the intelligence agencies are beyond reproach, and Gottfried Svartholm is a foreign Swede who does not matter to anyone, in their view.
When it comes down to the substance of this case, then it's the question of whether or not Gottfried's computer was actually being controlled, remote controlled, or hacked by unknown persons. Can you just to summarize your professional opinion on that? What's the possibility of his computer being remote controlled?
Well, as I said in court, I think that there's absolutely a possibility, but even more so, there seems to be a certainty in the sense that there are a bunch of other accounts on the system which are not him. Presumably, they're not his. Therefore, combined with the fact that someone can use it, you know, they talked about the squalid conditions of his house, and they showed a video, I think, of him looking like a, you know, decrepit junkie or something like that. His computer was the equivalent of that. Right? His computer was, without a doubt, like, it was a rancid shithole of security bugs and backdoors and everything. It's just a completely ridiculous situation. And that computer, like I said, if they plugged it into the network here at the court, someone would come running to unplug it. So in my professional opinion, that is without a doubt a possibility. And it, if you look at the error logs, which they didn't bring up in court today, which I was surprised about, they specifically say there's this many events, this many reboots. They meant restarts of the firewall and restarts of the computer, this many sleep events. And then they said there were 41 other events and crashes. This is a very important detail. What they're saying is the computer was misbehaving, and we have logged evidence of that misbehavior. That's exculpatory evidence right there that shows that this is a piece of crap computer used by lots of people. It's a total security joke, and it's malfunctioning. If someone were to try to break into it, like to exploit the web browser or something, as I put forth in the case, it's pretty obvious that those log files would be worth looking into. If you saw Adobe Flash Player crashing, for example, you're probably going to find proof that someone exploited the web browser, or at least Adobe Flash is part of the web browser.
But then again, I think it was differently put before, but you have a computer here which is, as you put it, historically badly put together in terms of security. Mm-hmm. In the jury's point of view, in their ears, it's like, all right, we have this guy, he knows a lot about computers, and he has this this computer that's wide open for everybody to get into it. Mm-hmm. Which sense does that make to those people?
Oh, well, that's really easy. Microsoft, thankfully, has helped us all with this problem a lot. You know that if your computer is infected with a virus and does something, that it's not you that did it. This is kind of a philosophical point, but your computer is not you, and Gottfried's computer is not him. Gottfried's computer was shared by many people physically in one room where many people had access, and remotely it appears that that was also true. In fact, it even connected to another computer, which is not being presented in court, which, again, exculpatory evidence is being denied to the defense team. That, to me, makes actually quite a lot of sense. That's not his secure computer. That's a computer that is not secured. And he cannot be responsible for that unless we are to say that we are our devices. We aren't our devices. You have an iPhone here, you have an iPhone there. If somebody breaks into that, like the PET, who is allowed to break into it, and then they do something to someone else, should we really create a society that says that because you were negligent enough to carry a phone, you should be responsible for everything the phone does? That makes no sense. We don't have that. So it makes sense to me to consider that Godfrey didn't try to secure this computer because it wasn't meant to be secured. In fact, he meant to share it with other people. And that means that there's a group of people. Their names have come up. Their nicknames have come up in the trial. And he's being punished probably for one of them. Right? They say there's no honor among thieves. Well, there's no honor amongst a hacker collective of people or a hacker group of people like this where two of them are in trouble and five of them are not. I mean, I don't know all the details of that group, but it seems quite clear that if those other people had access to his computer, then they can do whatever they want, and Gottfried will go to jail for it. In fact, he's already been in jail. And the other gentleman has been in jail for over a year. I mean, as I understand it, he doesn't even have a name in the press. So that strikes me as a crazy situation.
It's a bit different, but with your knowledge about the hacker environment, that information that was stolen in this case, like public files, public criminal files, why would hackers go for stuff like that?
Well, it's not clear to me that Gottfried's case is directly tied to that. My understanding is that there is a small subset of data that CSC alleges was taken from their computer system, and that a small subset of that data, like a text file, a snippet of that data, was found on his computer. In other words, why is it that Gottfried might have downloaded a snippet of that text file or downloaded a chat log and looked at it and saved that to his computer? Because those things are interesting, and on the internet, people pass around links. And that's how you share information, is you pass links and you pass files. So that explains to me why those things would be on Gottfried's computer. And that's an important detail. Now, the second part, which is really the core of your question, is why would these things be interesting to people, is because they represent political power structures. So this brings a third question, which is why would CSC put those computer systems on the internet if they are incompetent and unable to secure them? They are negligent in their duty. And so their negligence must not be punishment. That negligence must not result in punishment for Gottfried for merely being curious about something. Curiosity about the thing is not the same as breaching that system. And the prosecutor in Sweden and the prosecutor here, they have both tried to conflate all of those things together, but they are separate. They are separate things.
But I mean... whether it was Gottfried, whether it was somebody else, mm-hmm. who got access to that information, social security numbers, the file about sentences, criminal sentences, mm-hmm. that information, what value does that have for hackers? Can you go out, sell that stuff, get money, or is we did it because we can?
Well, I don't know about the motives of the hackers, but I can talk to you about, for example, the accomplices of the Danish Intelligence Service, the National Security Agency.
Yeah, but I would rather hear something about what you think could be the motives.
I am about to tell you that.
Okay.
Right? So the point is, why does the NSA and the GCHQ do it? They do it so they can gain access to other systems later. When the NSA and GCHQ broke into Belgacom, they didn't do it because Belgacom is terrorists, but because they knew that they could use Belgacom as leverage against other organizations and other so-called terrorists. So the same is true here. This information has some value to someone, and that's why they wished to have it. Now, whether or not it's to sell it, who knows? We don't even know who did the attack, so we cannot speak of their motives. But it is, of course, secret for a reason, and probably that secret information has some value to someone, but it's different depending on the motive. Most hackers, their only crime is curiosity. And it is important to understand that that's different than using that information in some way. Mm. For example, when the NSA and the GCHQ are active in breaking into things, their interests are political power, economic espionage, and in some cases, drone murders. They use surveillance data to murder people. So when they break into a computer system, they do it to assassinate people, right? That's what we learned happened in Turkey 2 weeks ago when Der Spiegel released the report about drone surveillance over the southern eastern part of Turkey. When they do spying, when they do espionage, when they break into computers, it's for killing people. When hackers do it, it's often just because they wonder what it is. And in a democracy, that's a thing which we are generally supposed to know about how the systems function, to know about who's involved with it. And when you consider, for example, this idea that Gottfried did it, then where's the copy of all the data? It sounds to me like somebody just had a snippet of it and it got shared around and these guys are getting nailed for it. But the real crime is that CSC put it on the internet in the first place instead of protecting law enforcement. If it's so important, why put it on the internet that way? Why make it that way? Why not, for example, ask Gottfried or other people like him to help secure those systems? And the answer is there's a cultural clash, and it shows through every single proceeding in everything that has happened in Sweden and probably a little bit here in Denmark, but definitely in Sweden.
Could you tell me a little bit more about that with the curiosity? Because the Dane, he told in court that he was curious to know if it was possible to hack into CSC. Why is that curiosity a good thing for people with IT skills?
Well, that's a leading question. But
curiosity. Like you found it positive. In general,
yeah. If it was possible to, he wanted to know if it was possible to break into a mainframe.
Yeah. So I mean, I have an interest in mainframes also as a computer security person, and the reason is because they're hard to get. They're really weird computer systems. They're totally strange in every way. Like the CPU is different. Everything is different about it, and it's fascinating because it's different. In a world of, you know, computers that are all the same, everybody has the same iPhone, everybody has the same laptop, a mainframe is a system which is fascinating. And you can't afford one, you can't put it in your bedroom, you can't explore it. So the question is, like, what is the drive to explore? And the answer is that's part of human nature. And the realms that we explore now are electronic realms. And so, of course, hackers are interested not in stealing information to cause harm, but to look, to understand, to explore the brave new world that we're a part of. You know, Chancellor Merkel called it Neuland when she talked about the internet. And yeah, so hackers explore the new land, and that is exactly what has happened, I mean, in so many cases throughout history. And mainframes are old land that new kids haven't seen, so they want to look.
In this new land of the internet, it might be the case that we'll see more of these cases in the future. What do you think should be done about the prosecuting system or the investigative system to increase the skills?
Well, you know, it's tough, but it seems to me like you wouldn't accept biological reports that are completely wrong. Right? So, for example, imagine that the prosecutor got up and he said, this is a DNA sample, and it says it matches the accused. And actually, if you read it, it says the exact opposite. What would happen to that prosecutor? Would they lose their license? Would they still be able to be a prosecutor? So I think the answer is that those people should be removed from legal process. If they cannot and do not have an understanding, they should not be involved in that process, just as we wouldn't allow it for DNA. But it's important to note that before there was DNA, it wasn't negligent to not understand it. But now it is no longer okay to not understand how the internet and computers work. And they've had 30 years to figure it out, but they never thought they needed to know. So if in the future there are more cases like this and they do not understand these things, they should be removed until you find someone who does. There's a good chance that there are guilty people that are caught, and they will also go free because these people are incompetent and uneducated in this field. You can't just know about the law. You have to also understand the facts.
But where does that leave us non-tech-savvy individuals when you contradict what we believe are the experts in the field of IT and internet security?
But there are no experts here other than me in this courtroom. I mean, do you assert that the national cybercrime people are somehow experts? What's their pedigree, that they have a university degree or that they used to break into computer systems? My guess is that they probably don't ever do, like, actual black hat type stuff where they break into computer systems. So what kind of expertise do they offer about that? I think the answer is none. So the point is we need to integrate people instead of exiling them. Why was Gottfried in Cambodia instead of actually being a part of society? Why did Swedish society cast him out so harshly? When you figure out the solution to that, you'll solve the rest of the problems, especially with the prosecutor service. But nobody who has skill wants to work for an unjust system.
Don't you, because that was also the question of obviously what the prosecutor trial today also, but to undermine you as an expert witness because you also have some political views that might in some people's mind be a bit harsh somehow. If you have, in Denmark we have like a huge trust in the public system, in Sweden as well. So the fact that you bring out these political views, couldn't it undermine what you really want to say?
Mm. Yes, of course, it could, but that doesn't change the fact that it's true. That is to say, the Pirate Party is a political party that understands technology. Other political parties are learning that too. There is a political component to these things, and to deny that is ridiculous. There's also a political backlash to try to crush people in their new political party. This is the old political parties trying to step on the new ones, and it's transparent. Carl Bildt doesn't want the Pirate Party in Sweden to have power, and he has done everything that he possibly can to screw with them, and that seems clear to me. Maybe not intentionally, but that seems to be what's happening as an emergent phenomenon. It also is the case that for this kind of a situation, when we talk about a political prisoner, there's a specific definition of it. And my read is that he fits that. And you're right, I come from America, and my country is far more messed up than Denmark. My country does political assassinations by metadata. You don't even have the death penalty. So you're right, I don't trust my state in the same way that you trust yours. But that doesn't mean that I have disrespect for your state. Quite the opposite. That's why I'm here, because I believe the open court practice in Sweden and here will eventually ensure that these people have justice. And I think that they're not guilty, and I don't think there's evidence that they're guilty. So I trust the state system here quite a lot. That's why I moved to Europe, actually.
One thing, because here in Denmark you have economical courts that actually specialize in economic crime and stuff. Would that be an idea for internet-related crime? Because we haven't seen the last part of it, I believe.
Yes, I think that it makes a lot of sense. But what I would say is that it's very important to recognize that the internet and society are the same. There is no offline world anymore. I don't have a cell phone on me right now, but I have a credit card. And if I buy something with the credit card, it's on a network. It shows where I've been. Everywhere I go, everything I do is part of those networks of networks. So in that sense, I think that every court should be a technical court. Even an economic court should be a technical court. It's not okay to not understand how the internet works when you are to judge the facts of a case, just the same as it wouldn't be okay to understand biology or economics in a court case where that is, of course, the most important part.
You have a jury, though. I mean, do they need to know a lot of stuff?
Now, maybe I don't understand the Danish rule of law and the founding of court systems here, but in my country, the idea in its ideal is a jury of your peers. Where will you find a jury of peers? There's not a jury of technically competent people on the planet that would convict those two. I think it's good to have a jury, but that says nothing of their qualifications. I think they'll probably do what they think is best, and I hope that they will make the right choice. But it is important to note that it will not be a fair trial if they don't understand the facts of the case. But I think that they all have the best interest at heart, or they would have been disqualified by the prosecutor and the defense.
The prosecutor asked you to try to make analogies instead of describing, giving your technical answers. Do you think it's even possible to, you know, explain these things with metaphors, speaking simple metaphors?
No. Richard Feynman talked about this with regard to magnetics. He said if you want to explain magnetics by analogy, that you will only understand an approximation of it. You won't actually understand it. And then he went on to talk about how, and anybody that thinks they understand magnetics doesn't understand it anyway. But the point is that using analogies to explain things, the point is that you're explaining it at a level that they can understand. And you're basically saying there's a different level they definitely don't understand. So you might be hit or miss. I mean, for example, is a cooking analogy useful to someone that doesn't cook? Is a driving analogy useful to someone that doesn't drive? Is a sharing analogy in any way useful to someone who doesn't share? I heard the prosecutor talking about left wing versus right wing. So I heard him talking about this, like, those left wing people that dress in all black, I think was the phrase that I'd heard. Does he even understand that the right wing was responsible, for example, for the Nazi horrors of the 20th century? What is he saying? To me, that doesn't make sense because I don't understand his context. What does he mean? I mean, Scandinavia is, everyone in Scandinavia, even the right-wing nationalists here, are left-wing by my standards. Right? So it's important to get the details and the context. And by that, I think if you don't understand it, you won't ever get it. And there can't be justice when there isn't understanding of the core facts.
It sounded like the prosecutor was trying to imply some sort of personal friendship between you and Varg or Niklas Fimerstrand. And it sounded like you were trying to distance yourself from Varg.
I'm friends with Julian Assange, and that's caused me plenty of trouble. I don't need more friends like that, okay? And the thing is that Gottfried is not my friend. I don't even really like Gottfried.
Why not?
He seems like a kind of contemptible person. But this is not a question about whether or not he's a contemptible person. It's about whether or not he committed a specific crime. And because of that, I'm willing to overlook the fact that someone who lived in Cambodia, someone who seemed to be quite into destroying his body, someone who's not particularly caring of other people, that person, he deserves justice too. You know, even racist cops in America deserve a fair trial. Everybody deserves a fair trial, and everybody also needs to be considering the context of that. He's still a political prisoner, even if he's a terrible person. And I don't know if he's a terrible person, but he never was very friendly to me. I'm sure that the celebrity hacker thing that the prosecutor brought up is no help. I think that actually means that real hackers of the like super talented variety like Gottfried, they don't respect me or like me very much. And I've always felt that. So the notion that I'm somehow friends with Anakata is, I mean, it's a stretch because, again, the prosecutor doesn't understand the culture, doesn't understand the cultural context or the conflicts. So it's easy for me to tell the truth about that and for him to still not believe it.
So with all these misunderstandings and the level of technological expertise in the court, do you think he will have a fair trial here?
I don't know if he'll have a fair trial, but here's my prediction. No matter what the outcome, Gottfried Svartholm-Vaag will not walk free from Denmark. I think what will happen is that he will be extradited to another country. Because my understanding is that the hard drive in Sweden was not sent to Denmark because it contains, quote, information about a third country. So what that means is that they're withholding exculpatory evidence about him, and they will not even give the full evidence to the Danish police, except in the form of screenshots and printouts, which, by the way, what is that? And then when they're done with him here, they're going to send him onward.
To Russia, right? There's a case on him in Russia lined up, I think.
In Russia?
Yeah.
Great.
It's going to be horrible.
Yeah. So as an example, there's that. And last year, I had to testify in Sweden, and I got him partially acquitted. But then the Swedish police did something, or the judge did something, which is even worse than the Swedish police, which is that they said that this hack, which happened 2 years ago, it's unreasonable to believe that his computer was remotely controlled and that he didn't notice it. But isn't all of the evidence there that he was just collecting backdoors and bugs and things like that, that in fact, he wouldn't have noticed it because it's like a carefree computer. This is completely sloppy. It's as sloppy as his house was, right? So, but the Swedish police basically, or the Swedish courts basically decided that therefore he must be held accountable for it because he's just so good he couldn't have possibly not noticed. But that's separate from whether or not he committed the crime, again. And they conflate whether or not he may have noticed with whether or not he committed the crime, again, over and over and over again. And I think that's happening here. And that is an injustice when that happens to him here because it was wrong in Sweden and it will be wrong here.
About CSC, the fact that the police, nor PET or the cyber center crime, Danish defense, well, neither of the parts ever had access to CSC systems. Mm-hmm. In this case, from professional point of view, what do you think about that?
Sounds like they don't have any hard details on the server being presented in court. They don't have any idea about the exploit that was used. They don't have any network captures of the exploit being used. So they don't have the gun, they don't have the smoking gun, they don't have the bullet, and they don't have the body. What they have is that someone somewhere once had a very small snippet of text, and that ended up on his computer, and another snippet of some people talking, which he is not one of them, and that text file could not have been created by the chat client on his computer. So what it says to me is that they don't have a gun, they don't have a body, they don't have a bullet, they don't have any evidence, they don't even have any blood. They've got nothing at all, except that he talked about that. They have, at best after that, some notion that maybe he, after learning about this happening, had maybe like looked at the web server or something like that. That's the best they could come up with. But even that seems implausible because it's most likely that someone used those computers to do that. So that strikes me as a very, how you say, the thing they say is absolute evidence of him doing it is only evidence that someone did it. Again, it's not evidence that he did it. Strikes me as problematic, to say the least.
Hmm. So from a forensic point of view, how would you do it differently?
Well, for one, I would take, I would acquire a memory image of the computer. I would look at every file on the computer. I would give full access to the information to the defense, so that they can actually look for exculpatory information, which is usually required by a fair trial. I would also have talked about the desktop computer, the router at the house. I would talk about more of these details, and they're not. And furthermore, for the CSC server side, I would ask for very specific information. What was the exploit that was used? Where was the payload? What's the network traces? Are there network traces? You know, where were his whereabouts and so on? Like all of these things, and a forensic image of that server. And if there isn't one, if there isn't a memory capture from that, if there isn't a disk capture from that, that's also presented to the defense team, it doesn't make any sense to me. It's not forensically sound. And when the computer goes from Gottfried's hands to the Cambodian police who held him incommunicado, You know, the anti-terror people took him and held him. People with machine guns went and got this, like, as the prosecutor said, poor, sickly Swedish guy living in squalor. Then they took him. Then somehow he ended up in Sweden, again incommunicado. And then at some point that laptop went to the Swedes, and now the Swedes will not give it to the Danes. How can the Danes do that? How can they accept that as evidence? That's not a forensically sound chain of evidence. The chain of custody is broken, and they don't even have the evidence. They only have screenshots of the evidence and a few small extracts. That is, to me, unbelievable. I mean, if I were the judge and I understood it, it would be like you showed up and said, we have some circumstantial evidence. Somebody else has the real evidence. They say they're not going to give it to us, but they promised to give us some screenshots. Here's a screenshot of a murder. I mean, is that a joke? Because that's what I see in there. I see the Swedish police, again, acting as if they're joking. And unfortunately, because of the lack of understanding, these things are being taken much more seriously than they should. But it doesn't pass the giggle test. You should laugh them out of court with that. It is not evidence. As I heard, some people did laugh them out of court. But I think it's important to drive that home. It's not because it's funny. It's because it's tragic. It's tragic.